Hello and welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your host, Daniel.
And Daniel.
Daniel, it's been actually a little while since I've seen you.
I know, it's been like a whole week. It's been lovely.
Oh man, yeah, I mean, the funny part about this is that if you've watched our last week's episode, you know that we just got back from Gamma last week, and, you know, I think we spent too much time together.
Well, because... when we had game night this past Wednesday, so it's been less than a week, it's been about 5 days our friend Gamehead Geek was like, you guys are an old married couple.
Yeah, it was quite a bit. We were bickering quite a bit then, but it's all good.
It was all in jest.
It was all in jest, yeah. We had a week to relax and to enjoy. I had the second half of
You had enough time to annoy your family, and then they sent you over here to...
Oh, sure.
Me.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Weirdly enough, my family missed me enough where they were willing to play games with me.
Until a certain extent.
For a while. Sure, yeah.
I mean, you have basically two teenagers in the house.
Yeah,
and a wife who tolerates you.
And a wife who tolerates me at best. Yeah, no, she adores me, and I adore her too. And but she doesn't play games. But she doesn't play games. And that's the big factor.
You guys just recently had an anniversary too. So
yes, we did. We just hit our 9th year of being married, and our 17th year together.
Yeah, I find that so weird. That I mean, you guys have been together for nearly 20 years. Yep. But I've been married longer than you have. Yeah. It's just always weird to me.
Yep, it happens. Thanks, Tabletop Bellhop. Yeah, it was a fun time. And you know what we ended up doing for our anniversary?
Play games?
No, she didn't. She didn't agree to that. But we ended up, we went out to dinner.
Okay.
We dropped off our kids at my in-laws. And we're like, yeah, we're going to have a full night of, you know, like... It's just us. Like, yeah. It's a date night. Weird. Like, how is this? Maybe we'll go see a movie. Maybe we'll do this. Couldn't find any good movies. Went and had dinner. And then we remember that we were going to feed, or not feed, but let out Gamehead Geek's dogs. Yeah. I agreed to it. So that was during our anniversary. So we literally just went, had dinner, came back, let out the dogs, went home, and then just kind of watched YouTube for the rest of the night with the kids. So, I mean, actually, no. We did end up watching one movie, which I'm quite a fan of.
It's called... Darkest?
No, I mean, I love that movie. No, this is actually somewhat of a serious movie. It's my favorite Beatles-themed movie.
So, Yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we watched Yesterday. Yesterday is so good.
It's okay. I enjoyed it. I like the premise of it. I just recently saw a really good movie right now, because I kept seeing it on TikTok, and I'm like, I want to watch it. It's a Guy Ritchie film. I like it. So, it's called The Gentleman. It has Matthew McConaughey and Charlie Hunnam in it. So, yeah, no, I just watched that. I'm like, okay, I like this movie a lot.
All right.
But Yesterday, I found it okay. It wasn't, like, my favorite movie. The music's great.
The music's great. I mean, of course, any movie with Beatles music is more often than not good. But, I mean, you have a few to compare it to, right? You have Hard Day's Night, which the Beatles actually made. So that's...
What, I mean, Yellow Submarine?
And Yellow Submarine, which, I mean, that has a special place in me and my wife's heart, because that's, like, really kind of, like, the first movie that we shared our first kiss. It was super
adorable. Which one? Yellow Submarine or the other one?
Yellow Submarine.
Okay.
But as far as, like, non-Beatles movies, you know what I mean? Like, ones that the Beatles didn't have a hand in making, you have Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with Bee Gees and Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
Then you have Across the Universe, which just took a weird, turn halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
And then you have Yesterday. And that's pretty much it, right? I mean, I don't know of anything else.
No, and, I can see that.
Okay, hold on. I got to say this to the podcast because that's amazing. When you were dating your now wife, Deanna, she was a backup singer in a Beatles cover band. That's awesome.
If you haven't noticed, we're big Beatles fans.
I am, yeah, and you are too.
I said we, and then I am
a big Beatles fan.
I have them on vinyl, not on the wall. I actually listen to it.
I just don't have a record player. I sold mine many years ago. I don't have antiquated technology. I just have that to look at and make cool. We're both Beatles fans, but like out of those three movies, that is like the only one that's not bad. You know what I mean? So therefore, it makes it really good.
Yeah, no, it's a fine movie. Like I said, I'd rate it probably a fair 7.
Yeah, I'd probably be about there, which is...
Oh, that's cool. That is cool. That is really cool. Tabletop Bellhop was saying they won an award at the AGM, the American Guild of Music, gold for overall band. They were covering the White Album, which that's is awesome. One of the best albums.
That's a great album.
Yeah.
Well, half of it is. It should have been one album. It really should have.
It really should have, yeah.
I mean, piggy honey pie, like,
but yeah. I'm a huge Beatles fan. I enjoy a lot of their stuff. Basically because of my parents. Both my mom and dad listened to a lot of Beatles growing up, and so I got into them as well.
That's how I got into a lot of my classic rock. Like, I was a big fan of classic rock, too, and I still am. Yeah, they didn't do that one. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
That would have eliminated them from contention. No. But Beatles, like, I got into them, I think, around middle school, and I just got, like, the Revolver album, which is still my favorite album of theirs.
That's still a really good
album. It's a fantastic album.
Mine is Abbey Road, still.
Abbey Road, yeah. I mean, they're so good. They're so good. You know, the later half is where I really enjoy, because everyone either likes the first half or the later half.
I like pretty much all of them. The only one that was kind of just too much for me, I think, was Yellow Submarine.
Well, I mean, half of it was just, like, experimental, right?
And yeah,
I mean, it wasn't really... And it was George Martin who did that. Like, it wasn't even the Beatles. It was just them doing instrumental for the movie, you know? So it's like... I mean, fine, but I don't consider that canon.
I get it, but that was, like, the one that was trippy. And, like, some of their later stuff, too... I'm trying to think, what was their other late ones?
Let It Be.
I did like Let It Be a lot.
Yeah, that was a much later one.
Yeah. That was actually probably my second favorite is Let It Be.
So apparently, Abbey Road was their last album.
Mm-hmm.
But the last one they actually recorded was Let It Be. And they ended up releasing it before Abbey Road because they didn't want to end on like a sad note.
Yeah, yeah.
So they ended up like, so the actual like... ending song, you know, the end that's on Abbey Road was actually supposed to be like their farewell. Kind of, but it was kind of interesting how that ended up working out.
I like how we went from a movie about the Beatles to talking about the Beatles.
I mean, we're fans of the Beatles.
Yeah.
I still want to play the board game Come Together, wrapping it around the board games about the music festival game.
It looks cool. It looks interesting, yeah.
I was this close to buying it the other day.
Nice. Yeah. It's funny, I had to drop the wife off at the airport today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, cool, I get to go to... Oh, wait, they're closed on Monday, so I couldn't go to the Game Vault, so...
Yeah, and then Tabletop Bellhop brought up the fact that there were a lot of music-themed board games, especially, like, there's one from Smirk and Dagger that really intrigued
me. Oh, yeah, Hi-Fi?
Hi-Fi, yeah.
Yeah, that one looks really cool.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I was just watching stuff about that, because I didn't get to talk to Smirk and Dagger all that much, other than we were just kind of talking with them about Kurt, because Kurt wasn't there.
Yeah.
That's a Brazilian game. Another one of those Brazilian games that were coming over, like Comic Hunters, like World Wonders.
Is it from the same group, or is it just so?
I don't know. It's from the Brazilian area, and so they were saying like the Brazil. I think Z Garcia was talking about what was it? Like one of his things. It was one of the videos where he's talking about what could possibly be the next big thing coming up.
Sure.
And you know, we had like the Germans and the Italians and stuff like that, and he said there's going to be a lot of hits coming out of one country, and he picked Brazil. And I could see it because you have the Comic Hunters coming to America with Spin Masters and Arcane Wonders.
Yep.
You have that other video game one that's coming from that same group. You have World Wonders that just happened, and then what is the one I was just Hi-Fi from Smirk and Dagger, that's from the Brazilian area, too.
That's awesome.
And yes, Rock Hard did catch my eye, too, just because also it was made
by... Is that the DeVere game?
Yeah, it's the one made by the bassist from Cherry Bomb, I think is what the band's name? Yeah.
No, that's the name of the
song. No, the song, yeah.
I don't remember the band name.
Yeah, but it's I think it's Joan Jett's original band.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Xylotar. Oh, my goodness. I really did want to play that one, but I unfortunately was really put off by Sandbags.
Like we were talking about it on Tabletop Bellhop's podcast. Mm-hmm. Sandbag was just too complicated for what it needed to be.
Yeah.
I don't mind complicated trick-taking games, but that one was just a little over the top for me.
Yeah, we're going to be reviewing a kind of complicated one later.
But the Runaways, that's who they're called. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So let's go ahead and get into today's episode. We're going to be doing a board game brainstorm today.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not familiar with that segment, it is one of our newer segments. So let me go over the idea of it real quick. We are going to be breaking down a classic game, 10 or more years, in this case, 40-something years, maybe even 50.
Classic card game at that. So.
It's a classic card game. Actually, no, the card game itself is probably like 100 years old or something.
Some
crazy amount. And we're going to be giving recommendations based on our five criteria. If you like how easy it is to play, then we're going to give recommendations for that. replay value, meaningful choice, game immersion, art and production. And we'll give you a recommendation for each of those five criteria, giving you 10 games between Daniel and I.
Roughly, there might be crossovers.
There might be crossover that you should look into if you like that game. And this game today is going to be...
Rummy.
Yeah, classic card game. Classic game of Rummy.
Yeah, set collection, runs, just things you're familiar with based off like the classic card games. That's what we're going to be talking a lot about. I used to play Rummy a lot. That and I think it's what the two-player version of is Gin Rummy. I think that's what it's called.
Gin Rummy, yeah.
It's, but it's mainly because the Gin Rummy was made for like the two-player part of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, So, I'll have to get into that in a bit. We'll have a discussion. But no, I did not put Matches on my list because I don't think it is a Rummy game. Because you're only going for pairs. However...
he does it all the time. That's fine.
However, I did finish writing a designer diary for Matches that hopefully will get published pretty soon. Board Game Geek, And I had a philosophical discussion with myself during that about what it really is, and I kind of talked about it, and I had kind of a running gag. Exactly. So we're going to be getting into that here shortly. But before we do, on these episodes, we do a board game brainstorm. We like to talk about what we've been doing outside of gaming. Daniel, what have you been doing?
Well... I know I talk about this a lot. As you can tell, I wear sports hats. I watch a lot of sports. This, for me, is like the Christmas of sports time. So I'm going to talk about that because I'm going to be watching a ton of stuff. Baseball season's getting ready to start, and they're kicking off in Korea, of all places. So the first games of the season are going to be in Korea. I'm looking forward to that. Spring training's going on right now, and so I have Marquee Sports Network because I'm a Cubs fan. So I've been watching a lot of the spring training games that are going on, seeing all the new guys who are coming in. Hockey season's ramping up for playoff. They only have a few more weeks left, a couple weeks at that best. They usually finish up about April, and the playoffs start in May. So that's ramping up. You're getting the seeding, people making a push for the playoffs. You have the NFL draft coming up. They just had their free agency, the first mark of free agency. Then you got the draft coming up, and then free agency too. All this is coming up in April, but this is getting me all ramped up. NBA is getting ready to start their push for the playoffs. They play a little bit longer than hockey, but their playoffs usually end up around the same time. And then one of my personal favorite things here is you have the only basketball I end up watching, the March Madness. They just started the seeding, so it's the college basketball tournaments where we get like the top eight debate from and stuff like that, just those kind of brackets. This is starting to happen. I've already made my picks for the men, the women, stuff like that. So this has been one of my favorite times of years, always has been, especially since I don't like going outside during this time of year because this is our allergy season. That's what I call it.
Yes, it is.
Because the wind picks up, the histamines pick up, and my allergies.
We had like a little bit of rainfall the other day, which immediately our weeds.
Yeah, but it helped out a little bit too because like today there was a little bit of rain as well, and it knocked all that pollen down while the wind was blowing. So that helped out a lot. So, but yeah, I'm really happy with this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. I noticed that the other yesterday when I was driving around and we were running errands, and 2 days ago it was really windy in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that I think a lot of people were feeling that yesterday because everywhere I went through, everyone was kind of like,
those allergy pills, man. Yeah. A lot of people take Benadryl. I highly recommend not taking Benadryl. It's good. But they say it's an antihistamine. It is not. You're just too sleepy to deal with the allergies.
When you're in a coma. Benadryl.
Yeah. Because it's people. When I was working EMS, we used it as a, I can't think of the term right now, but to knock people out. Basically. In fact, if you look at ZQL or anything like those drugs, they use the same chemical as Benadryl.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I use Benadryl as an antihistamine when it's really bad.
Yeah, and that's just before you can go to sleep.
Before I go to bed. Yes. Yeah. But normally I'll take like a Zyrtec.
Yeah, Zyrtec is what I use.
Yeah. But wow, tangent again, right?
Yeah.
Outside of gaming, let me tell you what I've been doing.
Allergies.
So, allergies. I've been sneezing. No. What I've really been doing though is I was thinking about it when you and I were talking. It's like, what are we doing? What am I doing outside of gaming? And I've honestly, when we got back from the convention, I've been doing a lot of gaming.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of my thing. And I was thinking that I don't think I've been doing much outside, and then it clicked. Because about four different ways I've been doing this, and this is stuff with geography. So, first off, we just came back from a travel. And we came back from a nice long traveling trip, you know, and we got to see the Arches, Gateway Arch
National Monument. Yeah, in St. Louis, yeah.
Yeah, in St. Louis. And, you know, and going through there, I was like, man, there was the Mammoth Cave in Kentucky that I wanted to go see. And all these cool historical places.
Or,
and
don't remember, the cave.
That we the saw cave, signs yeah. for. There was the cave. Like a million billboards. Cave. Like, it didn't even say the.
Oh, yeah, it said cave.
Yeah. Hot springs. Like, what? Wait, I thought you were talking about a cave. Like, is there hot springs in the cave? I don't.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was so weird. But, and then when we were in Dallas, I got to see all those historical places, you know? And so I was thinking about it. I have one of those scratch off maps at home, where every state that I've been to, I scratch off the state. You know, it's kind of one of my bucket list things where I want to visit all 50 states. And I'm down to, I have more than half for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe have like a third left to go visit one of these days. And I was scratching that off, and I was doing the same with the St. Louis Arch and stuff. And I was thinking about it. Not only do I do that, I watch a lot of YouTube videos about geography, and I'm really interested in the idea. And then on top of that, I just started my Google Maps lesson for my students. So I've been immersed in geography lately, talking about different things. I teach them basic functionality of Google Maps, because I found that's a great tool to learn, like, basic computing skills.
Yeah.
Like, for people who don't know much about how to use computers, even just functionally, but, like, also in a practical way, using them in a classroom, something that's as exciting as Google Maps is really engaging for kids and students. And every time, it never ceases to amaze me. We're going through random maps. I'm zooming in and out. I'm looking at different places. We're talking about what the colors mean, what the waypoints mean, all this different stuff. And then as soon as any student catches a glimpse of the Golden Arches, they're, McDonald's! And they freak out. And it's the funniest thing, because that is like their reference of hierarchy in their world. It's like suddenly McDonald's exists and all hell breaks loose in the class. I don't know why. I wish I knew, but it's hilarious.
I have to say, luckily enough, when I was growing up, when we were going to school, my dad taught me how to read maps. And I think Google Maps has just made it a lot better for me, because I'll just look at... I use them when I need to, but I could just look at the map. This way I can get a point of reference where I'm at. Like, if I'm in the city and I need to find out something. So I'll pull it up. I'm like, I'm here. All right, where do I got to go? That's where I need to go. All right, cool. This turn. But it's because I was able to read a map. Now that you're teaching kids how to use Google Maps, that's a good reference point for
absolutely,
them, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, and when I was growing up, I always thought maps were really important. And before Google Maps was really a big thing, 16 years ago, when me and my wife hit our one-year anniversary of dating, we drove to Florida through Memphis, weirdly enough. But the entire time, like, Google Maps wasn't really a thing, and I didn't have a smartphone.
Yeah, and, well, what, 16 years ago, there wasn't really smartphones then.
No,
you just had the brick Nokias at the time.
I think my first smartphone was a BlackBerry or whatever it's called, and that wasn't even much of one. But anyway, I spent like 2 days straight right before the trip, and I just flipped through maps, and I memorized them all. And the entire time that we traveled, I knew exactly what roads to go through. As we traveled up through Texarkana, through Memphis, down through Georgia and Atlanta and Orlando, and then all the way back through I-10, it worked really well. And it was just, I miss looking at maps. I don't know what it is about that, but there's something really enjoyable about them. And so much to the point, I might even be talking about a couple later.
Oh.
Yeah. So a little spoilers there.
Yeah, maybe. No.
Foreshadowing.
I'm luckily enough, like I said, I grew up with the road atlas and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. My dad, big thing, we used to, when we did road trips, that was how we got around for summer vacations and stuff like that, if we were going to Missouri or Nashville. my dad would have me read maps to him. Like, hey, this is where we got to go. My mom would print out a map quest, and he would just study it, and then he would look at the map.
Map quest. Man, yeah. I haven't heard that in forever.
Yeah, so she'd print the map quest out, and then my dad would reference it against, like, an atlas or a local city map and stuff like that. And so, yeah, he would teach me how to do that. And it was, yeah, exactly. That's how we did it back in the day. And my dad used a road atlas. That's how he was taught. And then he referenced it back to the MapQuest. And then this way he can get the eye of where he's at. Well, I do the same thing. But instead of, you know, for me, it's a Google Maps to like a map. Or how to read street signs. Like, I don't use the directions once I know where I'm at in the city. I use, okay, I need to go up here, turn left here, turn left here, and memorize the streets I got to go to. And so that's how my dad did it, too. Because he's like, I'm not going to read MapQuest. Okay, reference, good.
The only thing that worries me about, like, the future and, like, kids and whatnot, like, my kids, like, I don't think they know how to read maps yet. And that's something I need to fix. But, like, if we just lost our smartphones, we are fine. Like, we would be able to navigate because we understand the maps. I'm not so sure about my kids now that I think about it.
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure about, like, my wife because I can always tell. No, cities is a little bit harder for me. But, like, if I'm out in nature, I can tell where I need to go, which way is north and stuff like that, by just following the sun.
Yeah.
Or even the moon, based on where that point is. I can even dictate how much more time we have of light based on using my hand and stuff like that. Luckily, my dad had me prepare for stuff like that when we used to go camping and stuff like that. Like, if you get lost, this way is where you reference for north, south, east. So, like, I'll talk with my wife. Like, if I'm in the house, my cardinal directions kind of suck. But if I'm outside, I know where everything is based on where everything is in the sky or mountains or point of reference, that sort of thing. My wife, like, I tell my wife, okay, you got to go north on this road. Which way is north?
I read an article about directions and how they do it. And a lot of people who are familiar with stuff like that, if you give them cardinal directions, like you and I, like, it's like, all right, you're going to turn left, so you're going north, you're going to go about 4 miles, then you turn right, or you turn to the east, you know, like, we'd be pretty comfortable with that. But I found, like, my wife, she can't do that. Like, based on cardinal directions, you have to use points of interest. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're going to go until you
hit the... You see that Dutch Bros over there? You're going to turn right at the Dutch Bros.
Turn right at the Dutch Bros, then you're going to travel along until you see a Walgreens, you turn left at the Walgreens.
Yeah.
Like, and I found that that's two very different ways of understanding how to drive. It was interesting.
No, it is quite interesting because it's like, my wife is like, okay, Google Map is saying you got to go about 2 miles and you're going to take this exit. And I'm like, okay, why are you giving me a street name? What's the exit number?
Yeah.
I don't care about the street name. Give me the exit number.
Yeah.
She's like, but it says the street name. I'm like, look up. Do you see the exit number right there?
Yeah.
Oh, it says you got to take 24B. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. Because that tells you the mileage as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Cha-ching. I know. I surprised my wife the other, like, a couple years ago. And I was like, yeah, the exit number is how many miles there is.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, wait, what? Really?
I'm
like,
and also, the thing I taught my wife, too, is where the billboards are sitting, that's telling you where you need to be. If you need to be in this lane, it's going to tell you this is the road you're going to.
Yep.
Be in this lane. If it's in the center, it's telling you stay in that lane until you need to move over.
Yep.
Because sometimes these roads exit off, and so it just points you where they're at. And my wife is like, how do you know these things? I'm like,
How did
your parents not teach you this?
Yeah. How don't you?
Exactly.
Right? Like, how have you been driving around all this time and not knowing this? This is
what that made me realize is, like, my dad prepared me for adulthood, and some parents don't. I mean, my mother-in-law, I love her to death, but she wasn't really prepared for her adulthood as well as some other people. Mind you, I also grew up poor, so my dad was like, you need to learn these things.
Right.
Because
if you want to get anywhere.
Yeah, again, this is before the time of smartphones and stuff like that. I didn't have, like, a fancy compass or anything like that. Look at the sun. That'll tell you where you need to go. You don't need this stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was in the Boy Scouts, and he's like, you don't need a compass. Just look at the sun. It'll tell you where you need to go.
And most of the cities, like, where we live, because of the desert climate, they are always slightly west of a mountain peak.
Yeah.
And so mountains are almost always to the east where you're at. Like, here and all of the major cities in New Mexico, we're all just slightly next to it. So it's an interesting idea, and it's something that is like, now that I realize it and how much into geography I am, I need to teach that to my kids, you know, at some point, really get them engaged in it and get them excited.
Yeah, no, if exactly. I can. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we're going to get into today's topic now. We are going to be talking and giving you recommendations with our board game brainstorm. Now, the way this works, as I said at the top of the episode, is very simple. We have five criteria. We're going to break down our classic game, and we're going to give you recommendations based on those criteria. So we're going to start today with ease of play, and the game that we're brainstorming is Rummy, the classic card game. So if you don't know what Rummy is, secondly, if you don't, that's fine. We're going to tell you how it works, and it's pretty simple. You have a normal deck of cards, 52 plus Joker, and you have a hand of cards. And there's a bunch of different ways to play it. There's standard Rummy, there's gin Rummy, there's other kinds of Rummy. But what you're ultimately trying to do is collect sets of cards.
Runs.
Runs or sets. Yeah. So the way you do that is a minimum of three cards, and they're one of a couple different categories. You can get a run, as you were saying earlier, which is the same card, or the numbers that are consecutive order.
2, 3, 4, 5, but they have to be the same suit.
But they have to be in the same suit. Or you can get sets, which are 3 or 4 of a kind of the same number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Points are varying depending on the game. There's some that you score points with. Others where you can use, like, jokers. Others where you're trying to just get your hand in a certain way instead of playing in front of you. There's different ways to play Rummy in multiple aspects. But if you've liked playing that classic card game, we're going to give you some recommendations. Yeah. Let's start with ease of play. Do you have anything to add before we jump in?
No, it's just I remember that was the game I always played with my dad. That was, like, one of his favorite games
to play. Yeah, we played Gin Rummy, the way me and my family played it, where you would play the cards in front of you.
Yeah, and, that's how we played it, yeah. Is the Gin Rummy, yeah. That's the one my dad always wanted to play.
Very good. We're going to be starting with you.
All right, so my first game here, under the ease of play, and again, ease of play, simplicity, familiarity of the mechanism, the likelihood to get to the table. Is it easy to learn, teach, or understand? Mm-hmm. So for me, this was a no-brainer and pick here. And this was Archaeology, a New Expedition. Because you are playing sets of cards out in front of you, your whole aspect of this one is you're pulling off a deck of cards. You're pulling one card off the top, selling it to basically to the thing if you're trying to get certain things like coins or broken cups and stuff like that. So you're trying to sell like a reference. So I is sending two of these pot shards to pick up a coin because it's worth two. Sell these two to get this two, and now I have three coins. I play them out on the table. That's my set. Those are my points based on what it gives me. Very simple game, a fun game. I've talked about this one a lot, but that was the first game that popped in my head when we were talking about doing Rummy. Is like, that's going on my list because it has a lot of those. You're trying to do sets, not really runs in this one, but you are doing sets of things based on smart card play and the variability on it based on the different stuff that you can get out of the box. Like, we're going to play this temple, or we're going to play the pyramid, or we're doing this or that. A little bit of a take that aspect when you have the thieves come out or the sandstorms coming out, so everything goes onto the board. You got to discard stuff. So it's a little different, but it's to its core, it's a set collection game, which you're used to in something like Rummy, quick little card game, Archaeology, New Expedition.
Cool. And Tabletop Bellhop said his family played Mahjong, which is... Have you played Mahjong before?
Nope.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it's not the solitaire you're picking pairs Mahjong. Mahjong is like a Rummy game, but with tiles. So it's really interesting. It's definitely worth your time to learn. Alright, so... ease of play for me, I went off of, there's one primary mechanism in a lot of the Rummy games that's consistent amongst all of them, is that you draw a card, and then you either play a card or you discard a card. And using the discard pile is kind of an important feature of it, but knowing that whole draw a card, play a card idea, that's where I went with it. And I was like, what kind of games use that draw a card, play a card kind of idea? But it also flips it a little bit on its head, and that's Flux. Flux uses that as its core idea, you know. Now, granted, Flux gets really out of hand and ridiculous, but again, you're trying to get a set for completing the goal. Whatever goal is out there, those are the cards you want to match in order to win in Flux. Now, I agree. I do think Archaeology is actually a better pick, It's a little closer as far as feel. But as far as that draw a card, play a card mechanism, that's where I think it really shines. And Flux does a great job of that. Mm-hmm. Tabletop Bellhop, you have a great day. Thank you.
I was going to say, you picked Flux and you ran off our audience.
apparently, yeah. No, Flux, I mean, it really is, you know. It's one of those things where it's just as easy to learn. Like, because Rummy, I mean, it's like, oh, can you count numbers in an order? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, or do you know, play a set? Once you get three, you can play them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is, right? This is like, oh, draw a card, play a card, do what it says. Yeah, you know, exactly. It's pretty similar.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you on that. All right, moving into replay value.
All righty, here we go. I'll start us off. So replay value, you know, this was one thing where I was like, it's really hard to justify, like, comparing, like, just classic card games.
Mm-hmm.
Or it would be like public domain board games, right?
Yeah.
Even those might be a little easier. But it's hard to do this with, like, it's just a game you can play with a deck of cards. So I wanted something where it's like, it uses the same deck of cards. This one has about 60 or something cards in it. And the whole, again, it uses that drawing and playing a card. And you're actually being, in this game, you're actually able to pull off cards from the top of discard piles as well. So it uses a lot of the same aspects of it. Except, instead of trying to get sets, you're trying to get an order to your cards. And how one card connects to the next to the next. This is 10 Days in the USA.
And okay, yeah.
This is similar to like Racco in a way, right? Where you're just trying to get the cards in order. But 10 Days in the USA is very simple. You're gonna have a line of 10 tiles and or cards. You have a map in the middle of the board, or the board, so everyone can look at. It's really there for only reference to see which states are next to which states. You can draw a card off one of the discard piles or off the top of the blind deck, and you replace it with one that you have in your rack. If you see, like, New Mexico, then you could play one that's adjacent to it. So you could either play Texas, Oklahoma, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
And you could play that as your next one, and you're trying to connect states from there. Or you could play other kinds of transit. You can actually put in a car, which will let you skip over a state. Or you can do an airplane, which will let you connect to another state that's a different or the same color as that. Yeah. So I don't remember what color New Mexico was, but let's say if it's red, then you could use an airplane, a red airplane, to connect to another red state and thus continuing your line. And as long as you have a state at the front, state at the end, and a continuous line throughout it, then you win. But using that whole draw card from either the discard pile or the top of the deck is a really valuable example of why Gin Rummy works so well. Because if you discard a card that I really like, I can just take it from it on top of the discard, assuming somebody else hasn't done that already.
Yeah, so for everybody out there right now, he's mentioning this. The big thing about, 10 Days for the USA or something like that? It's hard to find at the moment, but we just saw a new gorgeous version of it coming out from the op. So it will be here about summertime. So that's a perfect time to start playing trips.
That's right. Hey, Corrupt.
How's it going, Corrupt?
All right. So replay value.
My replay value is one that we've mentioned before on this podcast. In fact, I think you've mentioned it in one of the Board Game Brainstorms just recently. This is an actual board game aspect of it where one of the mechanism is basically set collection. And you get the sets, then you play them out, and you put trains across the board. Ticket to Ride. That was my pick on this one, and it's just because it plays a lot, like Rummy, to the aspect where you're drawing piles. There's some face-up ones, so you can kind of consider it like the discard pile.
Sure.
You either draw one or two from there, unless it's a wild card, and then you only draw the one. Or you could draw off the top of the deck.
Yep.
And then you're playing different sets. So, like, if I'm playing all the green cards, that's going to allow me to put out that many trains for a certain route. And so, and the thing about this one, too, it can get very cutthroaty like it does in Rummy sometimes. When you're playing, like, with those cutthroat Rummy players, you can really get very cutthroat in Ticket to Ride. I've seen some almost marriages end because people are blocking each other.
Yeah.
So I like this game a lot, and it's, for me, in the replay value, it's pick your poison. You can go with one of the big boxes, like Europe or USA, and then you can pick up like Asia or Africa and all these different little map packs that work with the base games. You could also just pick up the small versions of the games if you want a small table presence, like London, New York, Amsterdam, San Francisco, I think is the most recent one, or one of the more recent ones. But it's one of those pick your poison. It's a very simple game. It's popular for a reason. So for me, it is Ticket to Ride.
Cool. All right. Now let's go on to Meaningful Choice.
And this one starts with me. This one, Meaningful Choice, was actually a real... this and Game Immersion were like some of the two hardest ones I had to come up with for it. Especially Game Immersion. But for me, on this one, it's going to be Archaeo Society. Because it gives you a lot of those... rummy fills where you're either taking cards off the top of the deck or you're taking from a discard pile.
Yep.
And so, and you're also trying to play sets for you to score points based on the runs that you're doing. So if I'm playing all of one color or all of one type, I have to be careful who I choose to be my leader. And you could put Ethnos in this one. I went with Archaeo Society because it's just easier to play and much easier to see for people like you and me. And also, the area control, I could take or leave with that one. Archaeo Society does a heck of a job where you're just going up tracks and trying to score as many points as you want. Much more simpler than saying, okay, I have more here, so I'm going to get more points than you for because I have more in this territory, where it's like, okay, I'm here, this is where I'm sitting, this are the points I'm getting.
Yep.
I love that aspect of it. And when you talked about it with 10 Days of the USA, you pick one up and you put them down, kind of trying to do like different sets. I loved it. I like everything about it. It's going to stay in my collection for a while. I think they knocked it out of the park with Space Cowboys on this one. I have a few nitpicks just by the quality of some stuff, but I think it's a phenomenal game. And so if you want that rummy feel but have a little more meat on the bones, I think Archaeo Society is right down your alley.
Cool. The one I picked for Meaningful Choice is one that won 100%. This has been called Gin Rummy the Board Game. And you've already talked about it. Let's take it a ride. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, you get some cards, and you play sets to lay down trains.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Gin Rummy.
It's Gin Rummy. It's a Gin Rummy mechanism.
Whether you're doing a 3-of-a-kind, a 4-of-a-kind, a 5-of-a-kind, the only thing is you can't use them for, like, runs or anything, right?
Yeah. But
The only difference is the board determines the length of the sets that you need to play, determines what color sets you need to play, and then on top of it, you need to connect certain sets together.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a brilliant... It really is Gin Rummy, the game.
And technically, you're getting runs because you're trying to connect your tickets, so you're trying to set up, by playing these cards a certain way, to set up your long-term run to get from here to here.
Exactly. I mean, I can't disagree with you anymore than that. It's 100%. This was the first game that I put on my list where I was like, oh, we're going off for Rummy? Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Because it is. You know, and that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons I like Ticket to Ride so much when we first got into the hobby, is because I was already familiar with that mechanism. Yeah. So, yeah, 100%, Meaningful Choice, Ticket to Ride, takes Rummy to the next level.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now we're going to go into Game Immersion.
All right, who's starting this one?
You. That would be me. So, Game Immersion... So
this was hard for me just because Game Immersion, we talk about like getting into the game and the table talk.
Yes.
You don't really get a lot of that with Rummy games.
The only thing that I got from this, and the only reason I picked this game that's coming up, is because there are times where you get the right set, get what you want, and you feel really clever about the choices you made through it. It's whether you want to take the top card and be safe from the discard pile, or draw the top card from the draw pile and risk it. This is kind of the same idea, except this is a press your luck game. I picked Push by Ravensburger.
Yeah, I played this one.
It's been a while, huh?
Yeah.
Like you've never played it, or you?
I don't think I might have. It's just been so long.
Yeah, so it's a press barrel haul game.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a press your luck, and you have certain numbers, 1 through 6, I believe. And you're...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a long time since I played this one.
And there's a number of different colors. You flip over a card, and the card you flip over cannot match any of the colors or numbers of ones that you've played, except you can have 3 piles, and you're adding to whichever pile you want, as long as it matches those criteria. Then as soon as you choose to stop, then you pick a pile, next player picks a pile, next player picks a pile, and then they add it to their individual colored sets. On your turn, you can also choose to skip and then score one of those sets and keep it safe. Otherwise, you can press your luck and keep going. But if you do bust, then you're out of the running. Everyone else has to do it as well. But there's an exciting little card where if you place it in one of the piles, that means that the player who picks up that card has to roll the die and discard all of the cards of that color that they have unscored. Very dangerous, really exciting. But again, you feel really clever for you're like, all right, like, I bet I could fit one more in this pile. Let's flip it over. Oh, okay, yeah, green six, boom. Now I have it. Now I know I'm stopping. I'm picking this pile. Now you can pick trash. You know, it's fun like that.
No, it is a good game. I haven't played it in a while, and we're doing game immersion, correct?
Yeah, immersion.
I haven't played it in quite a long time.
Yeah.
To the point I barely remember it, so...
Yeah, and part of the feel is that, like, when I'm sitting and watching, like, the discard pile, I'm like, somebody throw out the queen, and then you dump a queen, because you're like, I don't need a queen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yes, I don't want to make it obvious, but yes, I'm so excited, yes.
Nobody take that queen, don't touch that card.
I'm gonna get you, don't touch that card. Yeah, exactly, it's so fun.
Yeah, no, so... I had two games that I could have done in game immersion. There was two games that I was fighting with. One of them I talk about a lot, so I kind of wanted to push it to the side. And this is Fantasy Realm, because it's all about picking up things from the discard pile and playing different sets of cards that play better for you and, you know, making that choice. But the one I went with, because we haven't talked about in a while, it has a Rummy mechanism. But it's just fun because somebody would get mad at you because you're going for the thing that they want to do. You score a lucky ladybug when you do the draw from the top of the pile.
Yeah.
And this is Dragonwood.
Yeah, I forgot about the lucky. Oh, man, that's such a good pick. Yeah.
And because the thing is, you are either doing runs or you're doing sets of something. If you play all the same number, you get to do an attack on one of the monsters a certain way. If you do a run, you get to do a different type of attack. Yeah. And so they all have, like, different types of threshold. There's three different types of thresholds. It was stomp, scream, and...
Stomp, scream, and strike.
Strike, yeah. And so you have colors, you have numbers, you have a run, basically 1 through 12, but they also have to be the same color, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the different things, and each different monster has a different threshold, and the game ends when both dragons get defeated, or the card, the draw pile runs out twice, and whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. And so, yeah, there's a little luck in case of point with the dice, but your runs basically tell you how many dice you get to chuck.
Yeah.
And the dice are not like a normal D6. I think they're like 1s, 2s, and 3s, and there's some blanks in there too. And so you're just trying to be like, oh, I'm going to scream at this because it's the lower threshold. I have the colors. Yeah. And you can always just play one card and just take a chance with a die. And yeah, no, I like this game. And I went with this one in the game immersion because as much as like Fantasy Realms or Marvel Remix that do that, you're not really getting that table talk or that Discord.
That would be
like
a more meaningful choice.
Yeah, because it's just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, you're getting that because like, oh, you missed. Oh, now you have to discard one of those cards. And sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like, okay, and I'm going to take the top. Oh, of course, I was going to draw and you got the lucky ladybug. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's straight fun. It leads to a lot of table talk. There's not a lot of meaningful choice. That's why it's in the game immersion because it's just dice chucking at its core. But yeah, it just leads to so much fun. Is the game fun to lose? Heck yeah, it is, because you're like, I did really well and I still lost by a few points because you beat that orange dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Dragonwood is my game immersion pick.
Very cool. Alright, and now we're on to art and production, which, I mean, is kind of tricky just because of the fact that it's just a deck of cards.
It's just a deck of cards, so.
Yeah, so If I'm going to be called a cheat on any of these, this is the one, and I'll tell you why. It's a deck of cards, right? So I was like, how can you have the same... I try to keep a game that's in the same genre, that has the same art and production, that has it with it, but it's a deck of cards. And don't get me wrong, I like decks of cards.
And there's some really nice ones out there.
And there's some great ones out there. But I was like, what can I equate this to that has a good production that works just the same as a deck of cards and that same idea, but might give you a little bit of more tactility? And I went with Rummy Cube, which I know I'm giving recommendations for Rummy, so you probably already know Rummy Cube or Rummy Cube, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
But these are nice plastic Bakelite tiles.
I wasn't expecting this, but I thought we were going to talk about it regardless. So
yeah, I mean, well, you have a rack, right? And mm-hmm. It is effectively Rummy in a way, but there is some changes in Rummy Cube, right? And you have these nice, beautiful tiles. They're inlaid. They're colored nicely. Each of the four suits are different colored. Except there's the Joker card, which is like this weird, creepy smile. It's really awful to look at.
I can't play Rummy Cube.
No?
The colors, they mess with me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. The copy I have is really pleasant. The
version we have, messed with me. Oh, the reds really? And the greens.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay. Yeah. No, the version I had was pretty good, but maybe mine was custom. I don't know. But it worked pretty well for us. But again, like I said, this is kind of a cheat, a cop out of a answer. The other one I considered for this one though was Sushi Go, just because the iconography doesn't matter too much and it does. You know, kind of elude, and it is just a deck of cards for Sushi Go, but again, it's less about the mechanisms, more like what you're using it for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mine. And you can use Rummy Cub as a deck of cards.
Yeah, and my version of Rummy Cub is the Milton Bradley version, so it's really bad.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I inherited it when I got married. My wife brought it into the house. Her mom just had her take a bunch of, like, board games. Like, so I have, like, Monopoly 2000 or something like that in the closet. The tin version. And then I have Scrabble, Bananagrams. Like that. It's all hiding in that closet over there. But my art and production pick here, I had to go back and forth on this one. It was a little tough for me to come up with a game because, again, it's a deck of cards.
Yeah, I feel like you took it really nice on me because of your answer.
Do you know what my pick is?
I have no idea. I mean, it's just a deck of cards.
Yeah, it's matches.
Wait, hold on. Hold on for a minute. Now,
I said you can. I didn't say anything about me. But I did pick this one because, one, you can buy it. Two, yes. The production value on this game is through the roof. The reason I picked this one is because it didn't really fit any of the other categories. But the reason why I went with this is because Rummy is a classic card game.
Mm-hmm.
Matches gives you that classic card game feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really set collection or runs or anything of that matter. But I'm also going just kind of that feel of the classic card game. And that's why I picked Matches, because you have to follow a card like a normal trick taking. But you can play sets, because if you don't want to win the burn card or the fire card, whatever it is, you play pairs of cards. Ones, twos. So, like, say someone put a six out there. Okay, I'm going to play two twos and two ones. And there's my six right there. Mm-hmm. Now I got a point for my two twos and the pair of ones here. I can play a five and a one twice. Now I got another set of ones, because it all depends on how many ones I'm going to have in my deck. And so, yeah, it plays like that classic card game, because you don't know what really is it. Because you're kind of trick-taking, because you have to follow the lead. But you're also trying to play sets, because you want, if you don't want to go that way, you want to score your points here. Kind of a push your luck is like, do I could try to keep feeding the fire over here and be the last one standing?
Yeah.
Or do I want to like hedge my bets and, you know, I'm going to put some points here and then I'm going to use that burn card. So either way, as long as I'm still within the point total on that one. And by the way, Thing 12 knocked it out of the park on the production.
Their production part of it. Is beautiful.
The card stock's really well done. The UV ink, the graphic design is my slight knock on it, just because of the two color gems. In fact, I'm thinking about upgrading mine, in a sense, is getting the orange gems and buying just like a pack of the orange gems as smaller gems rather than this way. It's just easier for me to tell the difference. Other than that, it's well done. And so for me, I wanted that feel of a classic card game with a great production value, because you're not really going to get much more than a deck of cards kind of thing. So I went with Matches.
I feel slight, like, honored and betrayed at the same time. Because you explicitly told me I can't pick that. Now, granted, I did tell you I wasn't going to anyway.
Yeah.
Just because of the feel of the
Well, it's funny because I didn't want you making a sneak, so I said, surprise, no peeking, Danny.
That's pretty good. That's so silly. Speaking of matches, stay tuned for future episodes because we might be giving away a copy of Matches designed by yours truly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. If you ever want to contact us directly, you certainly can. We have an email address. It's everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com. And you can contact us whether you just want to say hello, give us ideas for future episodes, or enter in possible future contests. Hint, hint. Also, we have an Instagram. I almost forgot about that. We have an Instagram account that we've been uploading to recently. It's everydayboardgames, instagram.com/everydayboardgames. Go follow us. We post board game content. Should be good fun. Check it out.
As well as all video re-uploads will be found on YouTube under youtube.com/@everydayboardgamespodcast. And if you like what we do, there are three things you can do to help us grow on that platform. Subscribe if you're not. Like the video. And comment down below and tell us your thoughts on the subject.
Come join us for some live episodes at Everyday Board Games 2020. Or no, at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames. And you can join us like Tabletop Bellhop or our friends Corrupt Senate or any of our other viewers that tune in every time. And join in on the chat. Tell us your opinion. Tell us why Daniel's wrong. Either one. And yeah, join in on the debate. Again, that's twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
All right, you got it right this time.
I did.
Doing the email again.
That's right.
All audio versions can be found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast. This includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, Podbean, and Apple.
And we want to thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I've been your host, Daniel.
And I've been your host, Daniel.
And we want to thank you for listening to Everyday Board Games.
And remember, every day is a good day for board gaming.